Welcome to Scary Story Time by Spooky Boo. Before we begin, please remember to take a peek at the website at www.scarystorytime.com. If you enjoy the Tales of Sandcastle, feel free to subscribe to my Patreon page to support the website and podcast at www.spookyboo.club. You'll also find my friends and I watching creature features on Saturday nights at 10 p.m. on YouTube, chatting about the old movies and the guests. Come and chat with the fans as we talk about Vincent van Dahl, Tangella, and Mr. Livingston. You'll find more info at www.creaturefeatures.tv. Now let's begin. Golden Gate Jumper. The Golden Gate Bridge is a place where way too many people jump to their untimely death. According to sources online, more than 1,700 people have jumped off the bridge. I didn't think much of this until one night I decided to walk across the bridge after school. I attend college at UCSF and I was having troubles with some of my studies. I was also breaking up with my boyfriend, and I seriously needed some time to think. I drove down to the Golden Gate Bridge parking lot and got lucky by finding a space right away. It was around 4 in the afternoon, but the fog was rolling in fast. I don't know if you've ever been to San Francisco, but the fog can sometimes be either really pretty or really annoying. Tonight, I was happy it was rolling in, but I knew it would get super cold and I didn't want to be out late. I walked to the entrance of the bridge and started to stroll peacefully, enjoying my thoughts of how I was going to ace my tests coming up and graduate soon. I didn't want to tell my boyfriend about my move to get my master's degree at a different college because I knew he wouldn't take it well. I just had to figure out how to tell him, and going for a walk on the bridge would clear out those horrible thoughts. The further I walked, the more weight I felt on my shoulders. I had never experienced this before in my life. It was like something was pulling me down, slowing me down. I just wanted to stop and lie down right there and sleep. I had never felt such sadness before, and right when I was about to turn back, figuring it was the weather or the height of the bridge playing tricks on my mind, I saw a figure sitting on the side of the bridge, his legs dangling over and his head hunched in pain. He seemed to be crying. "Are you okay?" I asked. "They don't love me," he sobbed and kept on staring into the bay. "Who doesn't love you?" I asked. I was afraid this guy was a jumper, and that scared me more than anything. "No one. I'm all alone and I'm tired of the pain," he cried harder than looked at me. An instant rush of sadness and cold hit me harder than anything I've ever known. I suddenly wanted to know what it was like to feel the air on my skin as I was falling while staring into the bay with this man. This was a feeling that made me uncomfortable, and I looked over at him. He seemed to be about 20 years old with long beach blonde hair and a tan. He didn't look right for this day and age, like he was somebody from the 60s. "What's your name?" I stepped closer and held up my hand, hoping maybe he might grab it. With the other hand, I reached into my pocket for my cell phone and fumbled with the keys to dial 911. Maybe they would hear the conversation and his thoughts of suicide, because I knew if he thought I was calling, then he might jump anyway, so I hid the call. "Johnny, my name is Johnny Pierce." He seemed a bit more relaxed until he heard the 911 operator from my handbag asking who was calling and if I was all right. "Johnny, I'm Kylie. Can you just wait here with me? I need somebody to talk to." I would say anything to keep this kid from jumping. The 911 operator was still telling me to hold on the line, and the local police would be there as soon as possible. He looked down again. It was then I noticed he was barefoot and had on bell-bottom jeans and a tie-dye shirt. His puka-shell necklace reminded me of the one my mother gave me when I was a child. Either this guy was really out of date, or this was some kind of hoax. I wanted to believe the latter, but something told me he was real and about to jump. "Please talk with me," I pleaded with him. He looked over at me, tears welling in his eyes, and as he pushed himself over the side and down into the bay, I heard the scream on his way down and the splash of the water. Feeling sick and dizzy, I braced myself against the rail so I didn't fall. "Hello? Ma'am, are you still there?" I heard the 911 emergency operator on my cell phone.
"Yes, I just watched a man jump off the bridge."
I was crying and I didn't even realize it. "Are you okay, ma'am?" she asked as the police cars pulled up and then an ambulance. At first, they must have thought I was the one who was jumping because they started acting very cautious, but then realized I was the caller.
"I just watched a man jump off the bridge," I cried, and as I shuddered, the goosebumps grew in my arms.
The police looked down below and called in a jumper. They asked me to describe him and if I knew anything else. When I did describe him, one of the cops, the older one, shook his head. "Is this a joke, lady?"
"No," I cried harder. "I watched him. His name was Johnny, and he jumped. I'm not making this up."
"Ma'am, Johnny Pierce committed suicide by jumping off the bridge more than 40 years ago. They found his body on the rocks 2 days after he jumped. There isn't any way that Johnny Pierce could have jumped today. Maybe you were mistaken."
"He said Johnny Pierce," I retorted.
Days later, while doing an investigation about the event, I was called into the police department. They played the recording from 911, which included a male voice telling me he was Johnny Pierce and me begging him not to jump. The police showed me 10 pictures of men all around the same age, some dated and some new. I pointed to the one who looked like the guy who had jumped. The room went silent, and then one of the older cops looked at me and shook his head, saying, "That is Johnny Pierce." The Lady of the Lake, September 21st, 1974. The fog had receded back into the bay, which was a good thing for Donald Schuster. He was finally taking his vacation for the butcher shop, a much-needed vacation. He opened the shop in 1965 and hadn't taken any time off since. Every day he butchered animals that people brought in from the hunt, or cattle and sheep from the ranches in Valley Forge and other nearby coastal towns. It was good for business, as the grocery stores were always asking for his meat, and the local shoppers did too. He was so busy taking care of other people's prey, he never had any of his own. This weekend would be different. Although he might be a little rusty at hunting, he was sure no one else would be out in the woods outside of town, as most people were working. That is when he loved to take the hunt, when other people had to work. All he had to do was rely on his assistant butcher, George Staten, to fill in for him while he was gone. The weekend should be slow, as other hunters were busy and the farms were focusing on harvests instead of meat. "You have to remember to cut it just right for certain customers. Keep them happy," he told George. There was something about the glint in George's eyes that told him he had nothing to worry about. That kid, although only around 20, was made for success. He was sure he would have no problems at all. "Where are you going hunting at, boss?" George stopped sharpening the knives, a bit of concern in his eyes. "Over by Bushy Creek, near the old harvester rock," Donald said as he grabbed some jerky and soda from the refrigerator. "I hear the trout are always biting in the lake over there, and people haven't been hunting much lately, so the deer are everywhere." A bit of blood splattered on George's face as he brought down the cleaver on a skinned deer. "Yeah, 'cause that girl got killed, torn up by a wild animal, they say." "I ain't scared of no wild animal, George, and careful now. I'm leaving you here to tend to my shop. Make sure you're not cutting in the wrong places, and you drain them of blood first." "Oh, yeah, sorry, boss. I forgot to do it with this one."
Donald shook his head. Too late. It's probably already settled in most places. We can refund the customer and make dog food with it. Never leave any meat from an animal wasted. Got that? Yes, sir. George was ambitious. That Don knew. He also figured that his apprentice probably wouldn't stay in the business for too long. He'd have to train another kid because his daughter, Deborah, wanted nothing to do with killing animals. His wife gave him one child, just one. And of course, it had to be a girl, who would have nothing to do with the business. She claimed her job was far too important to be a mother of one more kid. Donald knew what she really meant, to have anything to do with serving a man and his family. Why he fell in love with an independent feminist, he had no idea, and now he regretted every minute of it. Confident that George was now in charge, Don left the shop with his jerky that he prepared the night before, and some spices. He knew that he would catch some trout or even a deer, so he didn't bother with any other food. Soon he was on the road in his old white pickup and headed out to the woods. Donald didn't put up a tent. He slept in the back of his truck covered by a camper shell. He knew the dangers of the forest and the annoying critters who would dig into your trash and coolers. Every time he went camping, something would get into the chest, whether it be a raccoon or a bear. This year, he was bound to have fish from the lake and stream, and that would make a great calling for a bear or any other hungry wild animal. Everything, no matter how smelly, was going to be stored in the cab while he slept in the back of his camper, safely hidden from the skunks and wolves. He strolled out to the river and the clearing to make sure everything was good. Then he grabbed a couple of lawn chairs from his truck and set up a campfire near the lake. Soon the fire was roaring while he cast his line and sat back in the chair, nursing on a beer. It wasn't long before the first bite hit, and he fought a pretty big trout. Reeling it in was a fight, but he tossed it in the ice chest full of lake water and brought it over to this old stump he noticed sitting by the fire. Funny, he didn't notice the stump before, but it looked perfect. He looked closer as he noticed the blood stains on the wood and figured it was just from another hunter. He tried washing off the stain with some lake water and a rag, but it wouldn't clean off and must have been too deep to remove. Well, he shrugged, at least he washed off any dirt and bugs that might have been on the top of the stump. Soon he was scaling and filleting his catch. He tossed the fish head back into the water for the other fish to eat, then grilled the meat over the open fire. As the smell of lemon, pepper, garlic, and fish filled the air, his stomach roared with excitement. It had been a long time since he tasted a fresh catch, and it felt good to be out here without the old ball and chain and his whiny daughter. What was up with that kid anyway? She didn't like the way he looked at her, so she looked a lot like her mother when Angie was young. Angie was a fox. He enjoyed the way her breasts filled out her shirts and the curve of her always too short shorts. Her clothes both excited and angered him. No man should ever look at his little girl the way they do, but she invites them with her slutty clothes and the way she flirts and walks, shaking that ass all over the place just like her mother. Her mother was another story. That woman always tempting men to smile and flirt. She was always nice to them, but when she got home, that nagging started right away. The woman never shuts up, and he provided a good life for them, but they were always wanting more. Every day he broke his back cutting up meat for people, and what does he get when he gets home? Some stupid casserole of the week from some dumb chick magazine and Jell-O with carrots in it. Who puts carrots in Jell-O? He wanted a man's meal. Steak, roast, potatoes, gravy. Something worthy of a real man. What did he have to do to show the bitch that he was the head of the household and he deserved better? He didn't care if she had some so-called important job at the school district. The schools were shit, and they paid shit. He should be making way more than her. but his business costs took up most of his money, and she spent it at Sears and Penny's like they were going out of style.
"Bitch," he spat into the fire and started to eat his fish. Damn, it was delicious. Better than the old lady ever made.
"She's no good for you,"
he heard a voice whisper in the wind. "What?" Donald jumped up, dropping his unfinished meal all over the dirt. "Look what you made me do! Who is that?" The water began to make waves toward him as he watched the center of the ripple, expecting a huge fish to jump out. Instead, a woman slowly rose from the waves and began to walk across the lake toward him. Donald squeezed his eyelids hard, then looked again. There she was, right in front of him on the edge of the water. She was beautiful, more striking than any woman he had ever laid eyes on. She was wearing a sheer white dress that looked more like a nightgown from the late 1800s. The cloth was wet and sticking to her body, where he could see every curve. Donald dropped his beer and stood up right in front of her. His hand shook as he reached out to touch the pearly white skin. Her body was cold, and he shivered at the mere touch from his fingertips. Her long chestnut hair wrapped around his wrist like a snake and pulled him closer. He was trembling at the coldness of her body, but he couldn't stop himself from touching her again. She laughed as he cupped her breast, and she put her lips upon his. Soon he felt something warm and wet slither into his mouth from hers. He thought it was her tongue until it reached his throat. Before he could pull away, it went down his esophagus and into his stomach. Then another and another moved from her mouth to his until the last one made him retch. He pulled away, coughing, then spit up a slithery black worm about the size of a long middle finger from his lips. It wriggled and hissed, just like the ones in his stomach were doing. He was sure of it. Donald bent over and shoved his fingers in his throat to try and vomit, but as he spewed and coughed, nothing came out but blood. "What the hell are you?" he cried out, smashing the worm on the ground with his foot. "I am all that you are, Donald. I am the lake, the trees, the wind, and earth. I am the ashes of the people and animals who died here, and the souls of the people who tried to escape." "Escape what?" he managed to blurt out while retching out pieces of worms and blood. "The massacre of many, the hate, the anger. Evil lives here, and it lives within me. I sought you out because I could feel the hate inside of you, Donald."
"What do you mean,
hate?" "Don't fool yourself. The hate toward your wife and your customers, even your daughter. You feel their contempt in their company. You know they talk about you when your back is turned. The words they use are hideous, and you know it. They hate you, Donald." The woman's sheer clothes dissipated, and black worms began crawling from the pores of her skin. They slivered all around her body, in and out of her nose, eyes, and mouth, as she smiled. He felt her cold hands on his cheeks as she forced him to look at her.
"I haven't had a strong life here in a very long time, Donald. I need life to live."
She stopped and then ran her cold fingertips over his cheeks and into his hair. "You're hungry. You dropped your fish and you'll need more food, but you forgot your axe and your gun for the hunt. There will be deer here later tonight. Go home and get an axe. Bring your wife back with you. I want to meet her." He could read her mind and knew what she wanted. She needed a sacrifice to survive, and his wife was the perfect choice. No more nagging or horrible meals. He could work as he chose without her control. As he agreed, he felt the worms swarming around his spine and brain. They brought him comfort somehow. Maybe a drug or a toxin, he didn't know which. He didn't care. Suddenly, all he cared about was pleasing this witch.
He snickered as he thought about his wife in the woods and how she'll complain about everything. She's always bitching and never shuts up. The stupid townspeople of Sandcastle love her too, always talking about how wonderful the bitch is when they come in for their meat. He'll give them meat, and it will shut that old nag up forever. A huge smile spread across his face when he thought about his customers. Oh, they'll still love her, all right. They'll love her so much they'll talk about her for years to come. And then he'll have that little wench of a daughter, all to himself to raise. What a prize. What a beautiful prize. His stomach ached with the wriggling of whatever those slimy worms were, and he felt them slithering out of his mouth and into his nose and eyes. Yes, Donald hissed. I must rid the world of the one who gossips the most, my wife. He limped over to his truck and tossed the ice chest and beer out into the dirt, not even caring that the beer bottles clashed against each other and cracked open, spilling the alcohol all over the ground. Before tonight, he would have screamed at the idea and blamed that bitch of a wife. But tonight, he snickered and drove to town. He laughed from the moment he left the lake until he reached the driveway. Quietly, he opened the passenger door to his truck, then found his axe inside the door of the garage and put it in the back of the camper. Donald smiled when he noticed the sedative that he used once on the dog when he had to pull porcupine quills from the animal. Just enough will knock her out until I'm ready for the bitch to wake up. Quietly, he put it into his pocket and proceeded to enter his home. I thought you were camping, were the first words out of Angela's mouth when he entered. He didn't expect her to be awake at this time of night. I forgot some supplies and needed a drink. There was an old bear that scared the hell out of me. Needed to calm my nerves. He could have slapped himself for saying something so unmanly, but it worked. He poured a shot of whiskey into a tumbler, then squeezed the drug into the glass. Want one? Sure, I'll take that, she smirked as she took the glass from his hand. He knew she would grab the first one, as she always had to be first. They both sipped at the whiskey while he stood by the doorway ready to take off. Where's Deborah? He said, with the whiskey dribbling from his beard. At a friend's house. What she usually does when you're not home? You're so protective of her that she leaves as often as she can. Don't do this now, Donald said as he downed the rest of his drink. Angela started to say something, but then yawned and shook her head as her eyelids dropped. She sunk down onto the couch and fell fast asleep. Donald checked her pulse and then dropped her into a sleeping bag, then carried her to the truck where he pushed her into the open passenger door and slammed it shut. She would be out for the rest of the trip, and when Deborah got home, she would have no idea where her mother went to. Once at the campsite, Donald knew exactly what to do. Angela would be out for at least another few hours. He left her in the truck sleeping and unscrewed the locks so she couldn't get out if she awoke. Even if she honked the horn, no one would hear her. As she slept peacefully, he grabbed the axe from the back of the truck and removed the fishing wire from his rod and set it aside. Then he put the stump near the lake, where he was infected by the lady of the lake. That was quite a different tale than what his mother told him. She read from the old fairy tale books from when he was a little boy, until his father came in and forced her to stop. Good women should be cooking for you, not reading to you. He would grab the book from her hands and toss it across the room. Donald hated his father for the abuse, but felt the same anger that vibrated from his dad's words. Kill the bitch, a familiar voice rose from the lake. The worms in his body danced and wriggled as he watched his father walk across the water into the stump. Do it right here. Donald obeyed just like he always followed his father's words. He was no longer excited, but scared. The sweat dripped from his brow as he hoisted Angela out of the truck and over his shoulder. He laid her on the ground and slipped off the sleeping bag. With the fishing wire, he bound her legs, then placed her head on the stump. Her hands were tied behind her back, yet she just snoozed away. Maybe you gave her too much. Hopefully not. He wanted to see her scream as she died, and had to do it before sunrise. He looked over towards the lake, but his father was gone and replaced by the lake lady. She floated about 3 feet above the ground, towering over the couple and smiling. "Awaken," she whispered. Soon Angela was trying to squirm out of the fishing wire, but it was much too tight. She screamed until Donald put the dirty rag he cleaned off the stump with into her mouth. The bugs on it crawled across her face and into her hair, trying to get out of the light. She squirmed more while the hatred in her eyes stabbed at Don. "Good," the lady cooed. "I feed from your anger and fear." Angela tried to scream as she watched the black worms crawl out of the lady's mouth and down her body to her toes, where they slithered to Angela, and into one eye and out the other. Donald stood between them, tapping the axe into his hand and smirking at his wife. The worms made their way up his pant leg, out from his shirt and into his mouth, then out of his eyes. On exit, they found their master's feet again and slithered back between her lips. Donald pulled the rag from Angela's mouth as she screamed and begged him to stop. He smiled, worms dripping from his teeth, as he swung the axe down harder than he ever had before. With one swipe, her neck was broken, and her head hung only by the skin on the other side. "Good," laughed the lady. "She's infected. I want you to do what you do best. Be creative. People are hungry, and they must not know what happened." The next day, Donald came running into the police department, screaming. "Calm down, Don. What's the problem?" Officer Tony Bishop, dressed in street uniform, said as he offered a seat to Don. "We was camping down by the lake, and my wife said she had to pee. So she went into the woods, and I didn't see her again. I waited all night and searched for her by myself, but she's gone, officer." Donald filled out the forms of what happened while Officer Bishop set up a search party for that afternoon. The butcher offered to cook for them with meat from his butcher shop and stayed put serving food while they searched, just in case she showed up. "He wanted to be right there," he told Tony. It was agreed upon, and Donald brought back the biggest pot of homemade chili for the search parties, along with beer, soda, and bread. "This is delicious," George Stanton said as he scooped the last bit of chili from his bowl and followed with a sip of beer. "Be careful there, George. There are plenty of cops here, and you're not 21 yet." Donald tapped his beer against George's in a cheer. "What do you think happened to Angie, Donald? This is crazy." "I don't know, son, but luckily we caught that deer last night, so I can make this chili today for everyone helping out. It's really appreciated." "But you didn't have time to bleed it out," George scoffed, remembering the tongue lashing I had earlier. "You liked it, didn't you?" "Yeah, it tasted mighty fine. Best chili I've ever had. People are going to be talking about this recipe for decades." "Good." Donald turned around and smiled, his eyes filling with the blackness from the lake. Then he laughed. "Angela always did make great chili." Welcome to Scary Story Time, where Spooky Boo tells the freaky, scary stories from the paranormal town of Sandcastle. Tonight we learn about Johnny Pierce. Johnny frequently scares sightseers on the Golden Gate Bridge because he regrets the decision he made so many years ago. But why did Johnny jump? Tonight you'll learn about Johnny and the freaky path he took to his own demise. Note, this story has some mature topics and may not be for everyone. Please take this into consideration when reading or listening. If dark horror involving topics scare you or may bring certain triggers, then this may not be the story for you. This is what happened to Johnny Pierce before the ghost story of the Golden Gate Jumper. For more information on Scary Storytime, visit the website at www.scarystorytime.com. If you would love to support the podcast, join Spooky Boo at the Spooky Boo Club, www.spookyboo.club. By joining, you can get access to the old creepypasta stories I've told, behind the story and video scenes, website advertising opportunities, and a whole lot more. Now let's begin. July 10th, 1976. The story of Johnny Pierce. I've been kind of busy with this new girl. We were having a lot of fun together, and she actually let me get to first base. Deborah and I have been hanging out together and going to the snack shack at the beach every day, then sitting together in the sand until sunset. Then last night she told me I could kiss her. She said, "Johnny, you can kiss me, okay? Is that all right with you?" What did you think I would do? I leaned over and kissed her. The next thing I knew, we were rolling around in the sand. I had one hand up her shirt ready to get to second base, and then her dad started yelling at her. She went home with him, and I haven't spoken to her all day. She wasn't even at summer school. We were both flunking classes and had to take a little extra credit before the fall. That's how I got to know her better. Her dad was yelling at her so much that I was a bit worried. "Hey, man, take it easy," I yelled at him. I probably shouldn't have. His face turned bright red and he started screaming at me. "Like what? She's your property, man? Dude, she's almost a woman," I yelled back at him. "Johnny, stop. You're going to make it worse." She was crying. Those were the last words I heard from her as she burned a hole into my heart. That night I went home. I figured her dad would just yell at her for a bit until he calmed down. That's what mine always did. Sometimes he smacked me around good, but she never had any marks on her, so it couldn't be happening to Deb. I walked in front of the door to find my dad sound asleep on the couch with a bottle of Jack in one hand and a smoldering cigarette in the other. "Shit," I said as I put an ashtray under the burning cherry. If I took it away, he'd wake up and hell would break loose. He hated it when I messed with his smokes. Mom wasn't around. She was probably out again with her friends at the bar. Right. I knew what she was doing, even if Dad didn't. She's out messing around with other men. I've seen her. But he acts like he doesn't care. I told him, but he just drinks away his sorrow. Then she gets home. They fight. She ends up with a black eye, and they make up. It's really sad and pathetic. No one ever asks how it affects me. What the hell would they care anyway? As long as he gets his booze and she gets her men, they're decent to me. Well, I mean, they ignore me. Believe me, it's better than the alternative. At least Deb's parents pay attention to her. At least they give a damn. I tried to call Deb, but her line just rang and rang. She said that her dad let her have her own phone as long as she behaved. I then called the main line. "Hey, man, is Deb there?" I asked when he answered. "No. She went to her mother's house for the summer," her dad grunted. The anger in his voice put me on alert. He was pissed off. "Is there any way I can speak to her? Get a number, maybe?" "No. She's done being a little floozy for you. I saw you two. Now get lost, punk." He slammed the phone down so hard in my ear I could hear the bell go off before it disconnected. I didn't know her mom's name or address or anything. I guess I'll just be here the whole summer while my friends are partying with their chicks or on vacation. Nothing much happens in this boring town of Sandcastle. I should head on down to San Francisco and hang out at the Hate, but I've got a day job here that keeps me home. If I didn't have a job, then I'd have nothing. All of my clothes and food are sunk in the bottom of my pop's bottle every night. After Dad's smoke died out, I felt safe enough to go hit the forest for a little camping. It was really groovy out there. You could see the stars for miles and miles. It's a little creepy at night, and you hear about the stories of ghosts and strange animals, but I've never seen them. Personally, I think people just get high when they talk about the weird stuff that happens. They go on and on about wolves and ghosts like they're tripping on LSD or mushrooms or something. Maybe they are. All I have is a little bit of weed left in the lid I bought a few days ago and some paper. I'll be fine. I grab some tarp, a sleeping bag, a flashlight, my baggie and a lighter, a jug of water, a lantern, and my buck knife, then headed out to the woods. Dad was passed out cold. He wouldn't be lighting any smokes for the rest of the night, and Mom was finally home, passed out in bed. I might even stay out there for a few days. Hell, they wouldn't notice one bit. They never do. It was a good 20-minute walk to find the right spot where to camp out. It was a clearing in the redwood trees with lots of open space to build a small fire. Along the way, I gathered kindling and rocks in the extra bag I brought, so it wouldn't be a problem. As I brushed away the dead leaves and branches for a spot to place the stones, I heard something moving in the bushes behind me. "Hello? Anyone there?" I turned and shouted. There was a bit more rustling around while the leaves were moving. I wasn't sure, but I thought I had made out the shape of a person. I took the flashlight over, but by the time I got there, whatever it was had run off. Whatever that thing was, it looked extremely white and naked. I figured it was a white or a light tan wolf or coyote, but it sure did look like it was running on two legs. The moon was bright and also playing tricks on the eyes and the shadows. While walking back to the campfire, I collected a few long branches and sticks that had fallen and put up a makeshift tent, something I learned from the hippies staying out near San Francisco. I like to go there a lot. I just lack the money, and finding a good-paying job is tough when you're not even 18. It's so stupid. I can buy cigarettes and booze because they think I'm 18, but I'm only 17. I got the looks, but no bread. No proof, either. I do mow lawns or handiwork sometimes. People know what an ass my dad is, so they offer me jobs under the table. But I don't have extra money, if you know what I mean. Just enough for clothes, food, and weed. Isn't that all you need? Soon the fire was roaring, and I leaned back on a large stump I found collecting wood. It was easy to roll over to the clearing. Someone must have used it before, as it looked like a stool or a chopping block made from a redwood tree. It had stains on it, so I assumed it was used as a hunting block, but they were all dried up. I could use it too, I suppose, if I found a rabbit or a snake to eat. I rolled up my first joint and let the drug do its job as I sat back and relaxed. Taking the first hit always made me cough and laugh as I held it in. Having someone like Deborah to keep me company out here would have been nice, though. As I imagined her gorgeous body against me in the sand, I took another hit and smiled. She was so beautiful. Her long red hair was always flowing in the wind when we were on the beach. It took me months to get the guts up to kiss her, and I was surprised when she asked. But there I was, rolling around with the hottest broad in Sandcastle, making her mine. Her fucking dad. I wish I could have punched that asshole in the face just once. But I'm a chicken shit, and because of that, I'll never see her again. No guts peers is what they'll call me. I roared in laughter and yelled into the forest, "No guts peers."
"You killed me,"
a voice whispered in the wind. I stopped toking and looked around for that weird coyote. Was it a dog or a person? There was no hair, but it couldn't be a naked chick running around the forest. Now could it? Had to be the moon playing tricks on me, and now this weed is screwing with me. I stubbed out the cherry with my fingers and laid back on the stump, putting my hands behind my head. Then I realized there was something sticky on the stump, drying in my hair and knotting it up. I jumped and looked at my hands. Nothing. I felt around my hair and on the stump. Nothing but the dried-up stain. Fuck, man, I'm tripping. The sleeping bag was comforting. I suddenly felt secure inside my little tent I made and away from that morbid stump. The fire was slowly burning out, and I kept a crack in the tent open so I could keep an eye on it. Then something walked between me and the fire. I froze. Suddenly, I was very awake, and any residue left over from getting stoned had been shifted aside. Or maybe there was something in my weed. I don't know, but it walked by again. Long, slender, white legs. Naked. I looked up as far through the crack in the tent that I could and noticed the tips of long red hair just below the shoulder. Deb? I managed to speak, my voice cracking. The legs disappeared and all I heard was sobbing. Abroad, crying. I poked my head through the crude tent and saw her sitting, no, kneeling, next to the stump. She was naked, her head laying across the stump and her arms behind her back.
You killed me.
This time it came from her lips. I scrambled out from the tent, tearing it down with my hands, and crawled over to her. Baby, what are you talking about? Let's get you in some clothes. I put my hand on her shoulder, and it was as cold as ice. What felt like an electric shock went through my body, and suddenly I was watching the day her dad was screaming at me. You whore! You little whore! He screamed as he pulled her by her hair into the forest. I took care of you when your mother left. She never left, though. I killed that bitch, just like I'm going to kill you. Take off your clothes, bitch.
No, Daddy, no, not again.
The tears burned in my eyes as I watched my girl in such pain. I thought her life was perfect. How wrong I was. I'm not going to do that again. You're used goods now. Take them off. He yanked on her hair hard. Deb took off her clothes as she sobbed. I tried to look away, but I was frozen. So frozen I couldn't even yell or help her. It can't be real. This must be a nightmare. I watched as she kneeled again, almost like she knew what was about to come next. With her eyes closed, she opened her mouth and put her hands behind her back.
You got part of this right this time.
Too late, he scowled. With one hand, he shoved her head down on the stump, and the other pulled an axe from behind his back. Birds flew from the bushes as her screams filled the forest. With two loud thumps, the screaming stopped. Her head rolled over to where I was standing, and she looked up at me, tears staining her cheeks and the life leaving her eyes as they spoke to me. Her lips moved from the frozen shape of fear and whispered,
You did this to me.
The words repeated in my head over and over again until I stood, using the stump for support, and grabbed the sides of my head. I pounded my fists against my skull and cried. The warm, sticky blood from the stump covered my hands and all over my face as I tried to slap myself awake. It was no use. The screaming continued, as did the sad, lonely, and angry whispering of my once beautiful girlfriend. I ran, stumbling over the roots of the trees and the fallen branches. The forest was laughing at me. There were so many voices and whispers. It was no longer just Deb. It was everything. There was something evil, horrible in those woods. For years they warned us not to go into the woods. My friends warned me. The other adults in town warned me. I didn't listen. I thought it would be okay. I ran into my own door, not realizing it was locked. I pounded and pounded until I could hear my mother's footsteps. What is it? She scoffed as the door opened. The woods, Mom. My friend. Her dad killed her. He was abusing her, then he killed her. What kind of fucking drugs have you been taking now? I heard my dad yell from behind my mom. I dropped to the ground and sobbed. I didn't want to move. All I wanted was just to wake up from this horrible nightmare. No, I wanted my parents to care, to give a damn, but they just yelled at me to get up and stop crying like a baby. Them woods, son, they'll make you crazy. Don't go out there. My dad spat as he went upstairs to go to bed. Mom, please believe me. I begged her, hugging her ankles, hoping she would comfort me. Instead, she walked away. Johnny, You're almost 18. Grow up.
I went to bed tripping on bad pot or weird dreams. I didn't know which. Somehow I got through the night and then put on my tie-dye shirt and favorite puka shell necklace my aunt gave to me. Without thinking about my shoes, I grabbed my dad's keys off of the rack by the door and took off in the truck to the police station. They didn't believe me either when I told them. No one believed me. No one cared or even gave a damn. The cops wouldn't even call her dad to see if it was real. I drove my dad's truck to San Francisco, knowing what I had to do. I had to be with Deborah. And there was only one way I knew how. Sitting over the ledge, looking down at the bay as I cried, I didn't know what else to do. No one else cared. As I flung myself over the edge, I looked up. The last thing I saw going down was a very large bat with a human face smiling at me. And then nothing.